You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Friday. Mike McNamara here. Even though I don't introduce myself as my... Well, I do, but I don't go by. There's only a few people in my life that call me that, just so everybody knows. I want everybody to know that. Don't call me Mike. You know, I will draw a parallel. Yeah. Well, maybe I shouldn't. but I will, right? Martin Luther King, whose birthday we celebrated on Monday as a nation, his real name is Mike. Yeah, Michael King. His father goes to Europe at some point in his career as a Baptist minister, right? And he comes home and he changes his name to Martin Luther King. His father's name is not Martin Luther. And he changes his son's name from Michael to Martin Luther King Jr. And so he knew that, like, if somebody yelled, "Hey, Mike," at him, right? They were like a friend of his, because only his friends knew him by that name. So I'm the opposite. If you say, "Hey, Mike," it's like, "You don't know me. Who are you? Nobody calls me Mike. Nobody calls me Mike." Anyway. I don't know why I'm hung up on that this week. So I'm awake at 2:30, and I can't go back to sleep. And the joys of getting old, I guess, whatever the hell it is. And so Napa Man starts harassing me early this morning. He sends me a picture of him holding my dog after one of Jack's near-death experiences at the hands of Napa Man. Yeah. So Napa Man's got this big smile on his face, holding, right, the wonder dog, Jack. And I'm looking at it like, why do you want to dredge up that traumatic experience? Let me tell you the background of it. I don't know where the hell I was. I don't know where I went. I'd have to look at the date on the picture but I, you know, normally if I'm driving, I take Jack with me. Right. So, and this is before Joe existed on the planet. This is PJ, pre-Joe. So anyway, I get a phone call from somebody. Hi, it's some girl, it's a teenager. Hi, are you the owner of a dog named Jack? And I said, yeah. She said, well, I have him. I'm like, what the hell? I said, where are you? She said, well, I'm over near the Coast Highway. I'm like, fucking Napa Man. I'm gonna choke his ass, right? And I said, okay, well, where are you exactly? And can I have your phone number, which I already had because of caller ID? And she said, yeah, and she gave me her name. I said, okay, where can he find you? And I think she gave me her address, too. I can't remember that exactly. Because it was such an emotional event for me, right? Some of the details are blurred. So I called Napa Man. He's like, hey, what's up? I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm hanging out with my dad and blah, 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 blah. I said, really? Because my fucking dog is running the streets of San Clemente, you dope. He's like, what? I said, yeah. He said, no way. He was in the backyard. And I said, okay, look, I just got a call from a girl who's at this address who says she's got my dog. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah. He goes, hey, me and my dad, Big Don, we're on that shit, right? Big Don is the only Republican in the whole Napa County. Yeah. If this summer, if you go to the Napa County Fair, if you go to the Republican booth, you're going to see Big Don with his, like, Uncle Sam hat on and talking to nobody, right? Spreading the word about the Republican Party in Napa County. Yeah, so him and his dad, right? Him and his dad. In fact, his dad's kind of an interesting guy. We were talking at dinner, and Napa Man loves to eat, right? He loves to eat, literally with a passion. Described it, like some men would describe a woman, Napa Man describes food like that. Yeah, yeah, it's weird. So anyway, but he loves to eat. So we're talking about, and I think somebody said, hey, let me have a bite of that. And we're sitting at Chow in Afghanistan. And he looks up and goes, don't take food off my plate. And now all these heads turn like, what? Yeah, don't. I don't like, it's not a good thing to take. It's not a cool thing in my house. And so now it's like, okay, now we all got to take food off your plate. And so, but he starts telling a story about his dad. Like, his dad was like a territorial eater with his kids. Hey, could I have some of that? No. His dad was like adamantly opposed to feeding his children. Now, I've met his dad. His dad loves me, by the way. Feeding his children off his own plate. They could have their own plates, right? Right. But nobody messes with the king's plate, I guess, in that house. And so, yeah, so that's father of Napa Man. So he then calls me back and he sends me the picture that texted me this morning of him with this stupid grin on his face after covering, you know, Jack, who's like navigating the Pacific Coast Highway. Yeah. And he's trying to sell his skills as a dog sitter. Okay, so let me just give everybody in Southern California, right, the 411. When you see, like, ad that says, Napa Man, dog sitter, San Clemente, just put a fucking red X through that. Not only no, but fuck no. Okay? And then, to show you what an irresponsible person Napa Man is, he fucking blamed it on his kid. He goes, hey, let me tell you what happened. My kid, I'm like, oh, pff. What's the sixth step in troop leading, bro? Supervision, right? And if you don't supervise, the first five steps don't mean shit. So you're going to blame your kid. He said, well, I'm not exactly blaming my kid. I'm just telling you the truth. I said, it sounds like you're blaming your kid. He said, I would never blame my kid. Then why are you doing it? So anyway, so yeah, I wake up to that. I want to tell you, I got myself a Christmas present. And it came yesterday in the mail. Yeah. So, Mac, what would the man who seemingly has nothing get for himself for Christmas? Well, I got myself a shaving kit. I still have the shaving kit. I still use the shaving kit. I think that I took to Afghanistan. And it's this ghetto-ass Marine camouflage, right? It's a Marpat. It's a Marpat shaving kit, right? And it's got like the main trunk, right, where you put your shit in, with a front zipper, right? So it's got the top zipper into the main compartment. It's got a front zipper into a flap where you would put, where I put like lip balm, eye drops, you know, your fingernail file, your fingernail clipper, what else is in there? You know, your accoutrement, right? And then it's got at the end, separately, it has two little kind of, how would I describe them? They're like rectangular compartments, but they're separate, right? And they've got zippers that go over the top. So in one is there's a brush and some cream in that and Q-tips and dental floss, and the other there's a little thing of shampoo and a little thing of creamer. So that's my shaving kit. And I've been out of the Marine Corps for, 5 years? So I thought, like, I need a replacement. So I don't know why, how I saw it. I was kind of shopping for, you know, for replacements. And I saw one at Orvis that was not the kind I like. It kind of hangs on, it's a travel kit, so it hangs on the bar. It's got a hook, and I'm like, I don't want that. Because I like Orvis stuff because it's really good. A little on the expensive side, but, you know, so. So then I see this shaving kit from a company called Leatherology, okay? And it's exactly like the one I have, except the compartments on the end, in keeping with the way you attach magazines and other holsters and shit like that to your plate carrier, which you would know as a flak jacket. Now, it's this kind of, they have these kind of loopy things, but they're not really loopy. They're pretty tight. And then on the accoutrement, the magazine, you have these long flaps and you weave them through this shit, right? My old shaving kit has that kind of a system, and those things are on the end. It's only two loops, so, I mean, it's not like it's very sophisticated, right? So, anyway, so you could actually take them off if you want to. How cool is that, you know? If you want it, I'll sell it to you, right? If you want to own a piece of McNamara memorabilia, I will sell you my old shaving kit. I'll even autograph it, right? All you got to do is send me $500. Okay, that's where the bidding starts. So anyhow, Montana man just spit his coffee all over his shop. So anyhow, I see the shaving kit, and it's the exact same as my old one, except it's leather, right? It's beautiful Corinthian leather, and the side compartments don't. There's no strapping. They're like part of the unit, and I see it. I'm like, That's it. That's me. I don't know. It'll just be a more refined version of me, which is that's what I'm trying to sell now, right? Not ghetto ass, white trash, okay, anymore. Like, but, right, well adorned ghetto ass, white trash, okay? So that's like my thing. But I look, it was like $135. And if I got my, it says you can get your initials, your monogram on it, right? You can get it monogrammed. But I'm like, monogrammed, really? Not so much. Mac doesn't monogram my shit. But I would put Mac on it, MAC, which is not my monogram. It's my name among people I know to be my friends. So I did that, and it came yesterday. Okay, now let me tell you, so I spent $150 on this thing. Now, let me tell you, I know it's my version of Montana Man's $80,000 pickup truck. But anyway, it comes in a box. So when you buy rich people's shit, it comes in a box yesterday. I come back from hiking and the beautiful Laguna Mountains. And I check out in front just to make sure because I'm expecting that. I had to buy some business cards again. And I followed George Mendoza's advice, who lives in Texas and listens. Big Georgie. And do it from Vista Prints online. Pretty good quantity, great work, and they do, and they're reasonable. So anyway, I'm waiting for two boxes, so I check when I come home, and there's one. I look, Leatherology, and I'm like, yeah, I want to see this thing. So I open up the box, the outside box, the packaging, and it's got an inside box, okay? And it's like thick cardboard, right, decorated in deep, like, mahogany paper. And it's got a black, like, bow that goes on one corner, goes underneath, and goes on the other corner. Yeah, bow on top. It says Leatherology and shit. Okay, on it, engraved in the top of the box. Engraved in the fucking box. I'm like, whoa, this kind of shit rich people get. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. So anyway, I open it, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful Corinthian leather. I don't know if it's Corinthian or not, but it looks like it. If I didn't even know what the fuck Corinthian leather is, but if there is such a thing as Corinthian leather, this is what it looks like. Okay? And so I start unzipping the pouches, and the leather is like, it's nice, soft, thick leather. And so then I go, I run, I don't really run, but I was excited. I'm not going to lie. I go get the soon to be retired or sold as memorabilia for $500 where the bid starts. Email your bids to All Marine Radio, Mac, no, live at All Marine Radio, live.allmarineradio@gmail.com. Yeah. You can mail your competitive bids, or if nobody wants it, then I will donate to the Marine Corps Historical Division. Right. This is from Montana man who spent $80,000 on a pickup truck. It's a shaving kit, dog. And he spells dog. This is how stupid my friends are. He did, you know, and I'm going to out the CO of the 15th MU, Colonel Chris Bronzy, who's a buddy of mine. So I kind of send Bronzy a text message about, oh, so the Yankees sign Gerrit Cole, the biggest move of the offseason, and you don't, like, even communicate with me? Like, Bronzy, do you think that kind of aggression is going to stand with me? And I send this over Christmas, right? And he responds, dog, don't hate, it's Christmas. And he spells it D-O-G. Okay, first of all, dog, when you're referencing a friend, is D-A-W-G. Okay? Right? So I'm being culturally cool, but really stupid. All right. It's a shaving kit, dog. You sound like Rudy after his colonoscopy. No. This is the dude that spent $80,000 on a pickup truck. Yeah. And he's describing the key fobs. Hey, the key fobs. I have one, and his wife, Alicia, she has one. And it knows the difference. So when I approach the car, it unlocks itself, right? It adjusts the seats and the steering wheel to my profile that's attached to my key fob. And I get in, right? And then, right, it gives me a colonoscopy because that's built into the seat. That's why you pay $80,000. And he's like going off on his 80, and like, how, what's in an $80,000 pickup? And I buy a nice shaving kit. And that guy's gonna, I clean that up. That guy's gonna wire brush me? I don't think so, dog. So everything fits. So when I measured my shaving kit, right, and I was looking at the dimensions online, okay. Oh, he said, don't forget the mirrors adjust and the radio goes to your stations. See, that's, and he's gonna wire brush me? Come on. Yeah. And so when I measured the new kit, right, when I saw the dimensions online, and then I went to my old kit, my old kit's a little bit longer, and I was like, not sure everything's gonna fit. Let me just so nobody just like jumps off a tall building about this, everything fit. Right, with room to spare. Boom. So, quality event yesterday. Now, I saw something that broke squelch at like 2:15 in the morning, and it was this. Video shows Lindsey Graham at the Clinton impeachment saying there doesn't need to be a crime. Okay? Now, Lindsey Graham yesterday, I saw the video yesterday, so that means it probably would have happened on Wednesday. Lindsey Graham stood up and says, hey, look, in the other two impeachments that were both bipartisan that have come to the United States Senate in the history of the nation, right, both alleged that there was criminal activity on the part of the President of the United States. There is none here. Okay? So in response to that, there's video of the Clinton impeachment. I don't know if he was a representative or if he was a senator at the time, of Lindsey Graham saying there doesn't need to be a crime to impeach. Okay. Now, if for those of you who don't remember the Clinton impeachment, right, his remarks are in reference to the president's perjury, which was a crime. And this is what dumbasses. But again, this is just the veneer of read the headline, you know, some bullshit, you know, story from a political bias that's not even concerned about getting to the truth, right? And then you're on to the next thing. It's part of the info wars that occur in the United States. But anyway, what Graham is saying is, look, their defense is, right, him having or not having, quote unquote, sexual relations with Monica Lewinsky, right? Him, Bill Clinton doing that, okay? That, the fact that he lied about it, right, is irrelevant, okay? Because what he lied about wasn't a crime.
But I want to say one thing
hold on.
To
here
the American
is.
People.
Please.
I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again.
He's pissed.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false. I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
And those brain fucking dead political ass kissers in Washington, D.C., they applauded that shit. Yes, yes, please go back to work for us, right? Come on, man. Come on. I mean, that shit's ridiculous. But, I mean, that's it. So that's the argument. Oh, Graham said there doesn't need to be a crime. Oh, yeah, if you commit perjury about anything, that in and of itself is a crime, you dumb shit. So, my country, it makes me sad, right? It makes me sad. It makes me sad because it's such a great country. And if you go around the world, you see the importance of it being a great country. But we have people, for the sake of money, for the sake of their own political power, they are destroying our country. Now, it's a mighty country, and it takes a lot to destroy it. So I don't know that assholes like this, they can make it worse. I don't think they can destroy our country because of the genius system that our founding fathers put up, which is, right, which is bicameral legislation, which is three branches of government, right, which are checks and balance. So nobody can grab the wheel of the nation and go left or right with it. At best, you can go, you know, north, northwest, and north, northeast. Which, you know, which if somebody like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders got elected, I mean, like, hey, great, great campaign, okay? But it ain't getting through the House, and it sure as fuck ain't getting through the Senate. So good luck on that deal, right? Enjoy your 4 years in the White House. So anyway. Yeah, good. So on good morning to everybody. The chef's going to join us today. So if you have any cooking topics you'd like us to cover, we covered homemade pizza dough last week, homemade pizza crust, because Montana Man was interested in that. So if you have anything you would like to hear the chef address, by all means, send that in. You know the drill. Let me read you a couple emails before we get the program officially underway. This is from Ohio Man. Listening to the Tim and Jeff Hour for the third time. Now, mind you, that is an hour and 42 minutes. I don't want to say that Ohio Man's got an empty life, but dog, D-A-W-G, you, man, come a third time. A standout amongst all of their great shows. I was part of that. And like, you know, people I get, you know what emails I get? I think it's so funny when you yell at Tim Lynch right in the middle of the program because his mic is too hot. Dude, that makes, I got a half dozen of those emails in the last 2 days. Yeah. And then he's always apologetic. I'm like, oh my God. I remember Colonel Ebert from TBS, but never knew he was such a badass. 12.7 to the chest. Who survives that? Again, for those of you who don't know 12.7, right? That's a 50 cal, man. Yeah. Who survives a 50 cal to the chest? Only the lucky, right? Only the lucky. So the God who governs the flight of metal through the air, you know, smile on Colonel Ebert out there. Especially love hearing you guys discuss Commander Evans and the Battle of Samar. You know what? We and Ohio Man's been a part of it because he kind of primes the pump, and then I go down these rabbit holes. But the Battle of Samar, You know, if you haven't investigated it, right? Taffy 3, the Battle of Samar, which is a part of the Battle of Leyte Gulf, the USS Johnson and Commander Ernest Evans, who's posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor. I mean, it is amazing. And we were talking about, yes, in the segment from Thursday, we were talking about the Johnston at the tail end of Taffy 3 that turns away from the Japanese, because at first they don't believe that it's the Japanese, quote-unquote, center fleet. It's like they thought it was American vessels that they just didn't have a good fix on, and all of a sudden they showed up. And so Sprague, the admiral in charge of Taffy 3, he says, I need somebody else to get their eyes on. I need visual. And it was from an airplane, right, the first spot. And they're like, yeah, it's a huge Japanese fleet with battleships, right? And they're like, right, everybody fires the Brown Star cluster, right? Everybody shits their pants, right? Because this thing, if they catch us, and again, it's the last surface engagement that's taken place on the planet involving American warships, where naval ships are shooting at naval ships with guns. And so Evans is at the rear of that whole thing. So if you can imagine, draw like an oval, right? And the tip's pointed at Leyte, the island. So there, and at the, you know, and then at the aft end, a ways away, is the Japanese egg. Again, another oval pointed there. Evans is at the back, at the bottom of the oval for the Americans. The egg, at the bottom of the fat end, right? The carrier's trying to get away. He hangs, you know, he goes hard to port, which is left, right? And he heads straight for the Japanese. His first shots, right? When they let loose, they annihilate the bridge of I don't know what the fuck it was. Yeah. I mean, so their gunnery is unbelievable. And they hit it with like, I don't know, 60 rounds of 5-inch ammunition. Now, I don't care what ship you are. You get hammered like that, right? You're going to limp. And then they go on this torpedo run. So they go flank speed, right? So the engines are like full steam ahead, right? And what Evans is doing is every time that he sees a white splash that hits, you know, in the vicinity of the ship, they head to that knowing that they're not going to hit the same place in the ocean again. So I guess that was a strategy of how to dodge artillery, naval artillery. So he's doing that. And then they get in the position and they start computing, right, the torpedo shot, which they take from like 5 miles away or some shit like that. And they shoot like, I don't know, four torpedoes. And these torpedoes are almost 1,000 pounds of TNT. And so they hit one of the heavy cruisers in the front, then it rips off the front of the ship. So in the opening part of the engagement, Evans's decisive action and the gunnery skills and the torpedo skills of the sailors on the Johnston, yeah, deliver a thunderous right hook to Japanese task force that has battleships, heavy cruisers, destroyers, you name it, right? And so because of that, yeah, pretty crazy. So I have Ohio Man to thank for entry. I don't know if Ohio Man, I think it was a Marine captain by the name of Lawrence Serrano introduced me to that, I think. Or Ohio Man introduced me, and then she told me that her grandfather, the story of Lawrence Serrano, she said, so she comes on to talk about a thing she wrote about that she didn't believe that women should be compelled, you know, to be men in the Marine Corps. She said, I have no desire to be a man. Right. And so now we're going to go to harder physical standards for a small minority of women in the Marine Corps who have a really loud voice. And so they're going to raise everybody else's physical fitness standards. Is there no place for me, a woman, in the Marine Corps anymore? So it's a pretty interesting article. Anyway, she comes on in the first part of the interview. I do my normal shit. Where you're from? Right. Born and raised where? Tell me about that. You know, how does the Marine Corps get on your radar? Well, service, you know, has always, you know, been in my family. My grandfather was killed in World War II. He was in the Navy. Really? Where? Well, and I don't know if he was on the Samuel B. Roberts or the Johnston, but he was part of one of those two ships. And so she tells that story. She says, my grandmother, who married him at the age of 21, never remarries. And, you know, I just made a trip to Leyte Gulf to see where my grandfather was killed. And so either that gets it on my radar, or Ohio Man gets it on my radar, and then I hear that. And then Ohio Man sends me the book, Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailors. And so our knowledge has progressed. But it's an unbelievable story of selfless devotion to the nation, right? Which today, after watching all the bullshit with the impeachment, right? Maybe they should just do a timeout for the impeachment. Okay, everybody, I want to introduce you to a United States Navy commander by the name of Ernest Evans and the way he acted, right, in the best interest of his nation, okay? And I want you to look at yourself. And if he walked in this room, right, would he slap your ass right across the face? So, all right, now. We're also going to do Today in History today. Why? Because Catherine, right, got me a gift for Christmas, right? And it's a calendar from the History Channel. Or the History Network, whatever they call themselves these days. So you're gonna hear January 24th and January. I don't know if I should do the weekend today or on Monday. I'm a little bit torn about that. I don't know. Maybe I should do Saturday today and Sunday on Monday. Kind of divide it up a little bit. So you'll hear Today in History today. And let me tell you what. I'm going to tell you a story. In 1961, here's the headline. This is the tease, right, for Today in History. Headline, U.S. Air Force bomber breaks apart over North Carolina, dropping two atomic bombs. Tactical Operations Center for the, 19th Air Force, headquartered in Langley, Virginia. Watch officer there speaking. We just had a bomber break up and drop two nuclear weapons in North Carolina. Coffee spit all over the place. Can you imagine hearing that one? Holy shit, man. You talk about some assholes getting tightened. Hey, that would do the trick. All right, it is 8:33. I'm late. Whitney Houston sings the national anthem. Good morning to you on a Friday. Man, she sings the shit out of that song. The at the Super Bowl. I thought the Super Bowl was this Sunday. Like, what happened? Like, last week we had a break, and this week we had the Pro Bowl. Like, when do we go to, like, a three-week break between the last game and the Super Bowl? Like, pff, come on. Why not play it in June? What the fuck? Anyway, I got to tell you this, right, before we do the weather. Okay? And this is just a shout-out to the Chinese. Thanks for that fucking virus, man. Like, what are you doing over there? And it might have come from snakes. How does it get into people, you bunch of fucking nuts? Ugh, my God. Now, they've got like 35 million people in quarantine in China. And that's just, look, and that's just a drop in the bucket, right? Right? They've got a 1.3 billion people there, right? Trust us. If they want to lock that bitch down, they'll lock the whole country down. Right? Everybody's standing there in their mask, right? Yeah, that's what you get. Snakes. You got to be shitting me. So yesterday, I'm in the process of living my life. And then Kevin Norton, lieutenant colonel type, I think he's the MOI at University of Arizona in Tucson, sends me a flyer introduces me to people who are putting together this event. Okay, so you know me, okay, and my affinity for Iwo Jima. So I look at this flyer, Iwo Jima Memorial Service and Banquet, February 12th through 16th, Camp Pendleton, Oceanside, California. The Iwo Jima Commemorative Committee cordially invites you to a three-day celebration commemorating the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Iwo Jima. Right? And it's like 30 minutes from my house. The commemoration will begin on Wednesday, February 12th at 12:20, and it'll go through Sunday, February 16th. Did I say 12:20? It says 2020. The hospitality room will be open Wednesday, Thursday, Friday nights. Departures on Sunday. The Iwo Jima Memorial Service and Banquet at Pacific View Event Center, Camp Pendleton, will be held on Saturday, February 15th. The memorial service will begin at 4:30 at the Iwo Jima Monument located on the west side of that center. The banquet hall doors open at 5 o'clock p.m. for socializing with a no-host bar. There will be Iwo Jima memorabilia displays at the rear of the dining hall. At 6 p.m., the program will begin with a call to order by the banquet chairman, Master Gunnery Sergeant Len Mafoli, USMC retired. The program will close with the late Colonel Walter Ridlon's empty chair tribute. The Iwo Jima flag table, T-A-B-L-E-A-U, tableau, and taps. Yeah. I might go to that. So I'm talking to a woman, right? And her name's Gail. She's the daughter of one of the veterans of Iwo Jima. And so she got CC'd on the email that Norton sends to me. And then she reaches out and she says, "Hey, Mac, I was CC'd on the email. You know, would love to help you if you're looking for more." I'm going to stop, Gail, right now. You don't know. Like, this battle for me is like, I read about this. I have all kinds of stuff. Right. And these guys are my heroes. And I said, so first of all, whatever you need me to do relative, if you want me to spread the word to it, I'd be happy to. If you want me, can I interview some of these guys? And she said, well, you know, yeah. And she said, you know, some of them are older, but, you know, there's enough of them here that are still, you know, sharp as a tack, sharp as a K-bar. And I was like all a Twitter yesterday. I said, look, I will do anything to help. So, yeah, how cool is that? Yeah, answer, it's way fucking cool. So, this is dedicated to Lieutenant Colonel Norton, man. Way to hook me up, bro. And thank you very much. Okay. It's also dedicated to Navman in the hopes that he becomes a better dog sitter, for God's sakes.
Our country, we pride our country, man. In the air of the land and sea. First of all, You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think. And you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Neller. Grouchy old dude. And he is. He's every bit of that, too. Maybe he's not as grouchy anymore because he's not getting blamed for everything that goes wrong in the Marine Corps. So maybe he's like, but he was never like happy guy, just for the record. I mean, it doesn't make him a bad human, right? It is what it is, man. Here's a message from Napa Man. So one of Napa Man's other nicknames is the Big Cat. Now, Montana Man can explain that someday when he comes on to talk about that. But yeah, no kidding. That's one of Napa Man's big... And named after the Big Cat is Andres Galarraga, who played for the Montreal Expos. So, yeah, the Big Cat. Anyway, so... Yeah, Rob can explain that one of these days when he's on. And the weather around the country, around Marineland, currently... Cloudy in 45 in Quantico, Virginia, the off-ramp of the Marine Corps. I mean, the crossroads of the Marine Corps. Cloudy and 64 at Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune, so they're back into what's seasonably normal. 29 Palms, cloudy in 52, so that's seasonably normal. Pendleton, clouds at 54, seasonably normal. Camp Smith in Hawaii, where I got a weight update from Chris Cox. Yeah. Right, the last I heard, he was at 238 pounds, right? And since he's gone on vacation, he's lost 11 pounds on vacation. Yeah. So I'm going to say that again, okay? So the dude has lost 11 pounds on vacation. Did the record skip? Which has happened. That doesn't, like, he's the first human being ever to lose weight on vacation. That wasn't, you know, trapped on an island. Yeah, no shit. Nobody loses weight on vacation. Okay? Nobody. So, all right. Oh, you know what? That's what happened last night. I had some issues, technical issues last night as I was programming some stuff, and I did something that I couldn't remember what I left out. And there was one thing there's something I didn't do. And I just discovered what I didn't do. Anyway, Camp Smith in Hawaii, home to Slim Jim Cox from Massachusetts, who's still fucking there, man. Dude, go home, go back to work. Like, what's up with that? Currently cloudy, dark, and 64 degrees. Here's an email. Are you okay today? Is this a cry for help? No. What? Oh, because I like introduce you to the real events of my life? I'm fine. All right. In Okinawa, dark, cloudy, and 67. Ramadi, oh, but that's further east. In Lashkargah, in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, it's cooled off a little bit. Late in the day, dark, cloudy, and 48 in Helmand. Yeah. I mean, let me tell you, in the middle of the night, like, okay. But late in the day, that's kind of cold for Helmand, at least when I was there. And in the Al-Anbar province of Iraq, right? The nation that we went to war to save. Yeah, God bless anybody who hears those words come out of the United States. Good luck to you. In Ramadi, cloudy and raining and 50 degrees as the sun is setting in Iraq. So, now, because I just remember, here's another email. Now, yeah, Chris Cox is getting bashed on vacation. What the fuck? No one loses weight on vacation. Yeah, that's from Dave in Vacaville, right? Bashing a fellow shithole weather person. All right, from Pleasantville, it's 38 degrees on the way to 46. Light rain, light winds out of the east at 5. And a nice picture of Pleasantville. I'm kind of getting used to seeing Pleasantville on a daily basis. My shaving kit. No, you should have bought yourself a Peloton. I didn't. I bought a different version of a Peloton. Yeah. Lindsey Graham. This isn't shithole weather. This is like comments from the cheap sheets. He was the House manager for the Senate trial. He kicked some ass too. Oh, for in the Clinton impeachment. Shithole weather. Hey, Mac, today's weather is beautiful in Vacaville. Currently 48 degrees above zero. Winds out are 7 miles an hour out of the northwest. Looking for a high of 64. And, yeah, Vacaville is in the valley. And the valley grows a lot of rice. And so sun's coming up. And I don't know what the hell he's on. It looked like it may be in a duck blind or in a boat or some shit. And, yeah, he's out on, I don't know if he's in, there's a thing called the Yolo Causeway. And, when the river gets high around Sacramento, they release the river into the causeway and it's underneath the causeway, underneath is a bunch of rice fields. And so they flood that area. And it looks like that, Big Dave might be doing some bird hunting, out in the causeway. I don't know that, but anyway, this is about, where's the weather, man? Samar, I actually sent you the book before you interviewed Lauren. Yeah. You don't know this, but Ohio Man is the All-Marine Radio official historian, okay, because he remembers shit, okay? When she mentioned her granddad had died at Lady Gulf, I emailed you to ask her what ship he was on. I think you emailed her and then came back to me and said the USS Johnston. That was the holy shit moment. I started riding your ass to read the book. One day you mentioned that your son had taken it on his deployment, but you hadn't read it yet. That was good enough for me. Just an awesome story of the old core Navy. That is, in fact, true, right? That is, in fact, true. there's no more shithole weather. Okay, now, I want to play for you some audio because somebody passed away yesterday. Jim Lehrer, former Marine, passed away. And let me tell you, Jim Lehrer is a hero for a lot of different reasons. One, certainly his time in the Marine Corps. But you know what? He went on to serve the nation, in my opinion, as a steward of the truth. And for that, you know, we all owe him a huge debt of gratitude because the nation misses Jim Lehrer, horribly misses Jim Lehrer. And everybody who's involved in the media ought to learn about Jim Lehrer and ought to slap themselves in the face, right? Because there's such a shitty example of the kind of great human being that Jim Lehrer was as a professional and as a Marine. His fidelity and devotion to the truth is something that everybody right, is everybody ought to be a part of, that everybody ought to be devoted to. And the sad part is they're not. And so I want to play for you, and the Armoring Radio chief historian sent me this yesterday. Okay, so that's I didn't find it. If I had seen it, I certainly would have played it, because I believe that, you know, that you know, we as Americans, you can discuss anything. And the McNeil Lear report was that. It was, you know, smart guys, and Jim Lear was a conservative. And they, in a very articulate way, would go back and forth and discuss issues. They didn't scream and yell. They didn't bloviate. They didn't hyperventilate. They weren't hysterical. They didn't lie, right? And it was awesome. So this is him at the dedication of the National Museum of the Marine Corps.
Generals, colonels, majors, captains, lieutenants, warrant officers, sergeants, corporals, privates, ladies and gentlemen.
Just so you know, nobody introduces, you know, a speech like that, okay, by naming off every rank in the Marine Corps.
We are the Marines. And in this museum, our story is told. It is a single monumental story made up of 231 years of many separate stories of heroism and courage, of dedication and sacrifice, of service to our country and to our Corps, of honor and loyalty to each other in war and in peace. 231 years of professionalism and pride, of squared corners and squared away lockers, perfect salutes and good haircuts, well-shined shoes and eyes right, 231 years of Semper Fis and DIs. The first time I came to Quantico was 51 years ago. I came as an officer candidate, a PLC, on the train from Washington, having just traveled from Texas on the first airplane ride of my life. On the orders of a drill instructor, a DI, I fell in at attention with 40 other candidates on the platform at the train station over at Quantico, and the DI told us to answer up, "Here, sir," when our name was called. And he got to mine and he said, "Lee here, And like some kind of idiot, I blurted out, "It's pronounced Lara, sir." There was silence, absolute silence. And then I heard the terrifying click, click, click of leather heels on the deck of that train station platform coming in my direction. And suddenly there he was, the DI, right in front of me, his face right up in mine, and I paraphrase and cleanse it up a bit, but he said, "Candidate, if I say your name is Little Bo Peep, your name is Little Bo Peep. Do you hear me?" Oh, I heard him all right. And I think it was at that very moment that I really became a United States Marine. I am still one today, and I will remain one forever, as did my late father, and as is my older and only brother. I came from a family of Marines into the family of Marines. My father served in the 1920s under the great Smedley Butler right here at Quantico. He saw combat in Haiti and came out a corporal. My brother and I were both 1950s Cold War Marines in the 3rd Marine Division in the Far East. Since our Corps was founded on this day in 1775, there have been more than 4 million men and women who have worn the uniform of a United States Marine. This museum is about all of them, including us three Lee-here-er-ers and even the little Bo Peeps. That's because this museum is about what it means to be a Marine, no matter the time, the length, place, rank, or nature of the service. It's about the shared experience and the shared knowledge that comes from being a U.S. Marine, such as knowing that you are only as strong and as safe as the person on your right and on your left, that a well-trained and motivated human being can accomplish almost anything, that being pushed to do your very best is a godsend, that an order is an order, a duty is a duty, that responsibility goes down the chain of command as well as up, as do loyalty and respect, that leadership can be taught, so can bearing, discipline, and honor. That follow me really does mean follow me. And that semper fidelis really does mean always faithful. And that the Marines hymn is so much more than just a song. My Marine experience helped shape who I am now personally and professionally, and I am grateful for that on an almost daily basis. And I often find myself wishing everyone had a similar opportunity to learn about shared dependence, loyalty, responsibility to and for others, about mutual respect and honor, and about the power of appealing to the best that's in us as human beings, not the worst. As a journalist, there has been one overriding effect of my Marine experience. While debates over sending Americans into harm's way are always about issues of foreign policy, geopolitics, and sometimes even politics, for me, they are also always about young lance corporals and second lieutenants and other very real people in all branches of the U.S. military. People with names, ranks, serial numbers, faces, families, and futures that may never be. When Marines stand for or sing the Marines hymn, as we will at the conclusion of this ceremony, it's never for ourselves personally. It's always for the Marines who went before us, with us, and after us. First and foremost for those who gave their lives, their health, their everything at places such as Tripoli, Belleau Wood, Haiti, Wake Island, Guadalcanal, Peleliu, Iwo Jima, Chosin, Incheon, Da Nang, Khe Sanh, Beirut, and Baghdad, Fallujah, and Ramadi. The death rate among Marines in Iraq has been more than double that of the other services. That's a first-to-fight, first-wave pattern that has pretty much held since the Revolutionary War, when 49 of the very first U.S. Marines of our country died in combat. Their mission was aboard ship. There are still Marines who serve at sea. There are others who fly and maintain jets and helicopters, man the artillery, operate tanks and trucks, feed and supply the troops, compute and collate, train and inspect, march and make music, recruit, guard and escort, radio and communicate, patrol and snipe, as well as save tsunami, earthquake, and other disaster victims around the world, collect toys at Christmas time for American kids in need, stage a marathon run through Washington, D.C. for charity, or do whatever else needs to be done, particularly if the need is for it to be done well and be done immediately. We are the Marines, and in the language of the rifle range, we are always ready on the right, ready on the left, already on the firing line. Whatever kind of firing is required, and wherever that line may be. Be ready now, one and all, to hail a moving force behind this wonderful museum. He is Lieutenant General Ron Christmas, United States Marine Corps retired. He served 34 years in the Corps and commanded at every infantry level. He is now the president of the Marine Corps Heritage Foundation, the organization that created this incredible place, this National Museum of the Marine Corps. General Christmas.
How about that? You can't sit there and listen to that without getting tears in your eyes. So before we end this small tribute to Jim Lehrer, how about that for funny, right? You can and again, it's the same train station, really small in Quantico, the same platform there, and that have seen generations of Marines come and go. But so this is dedicated to him, and Jim Lehrer, in my opinion, should be a role model for all of us. Not only is his time in the Marine Corps certainly dedicated to the ideals of what it is to be a Marine, but after he left, and in the profession of journalism that is so fraught with lies and bullshit, Jim Lehrer always lived. What it is, when we say Semper Fidelis, he was always faithful to the truth. He was always respectful of other people. And so on the day after his passing, we salute him. And as good as anybody could ever say to a Marine, we say this: well done, Marine. And normally when I do this, I play the United States Naval Academy singing Eternal Father, complete with the Marine verse. And then I play the ceremonial slow version of the Marines hymn. But that doesn't seem appropriate after listening to that, right? So what you'll hear is the OCS version of the Marines hymn that I play in the introduction, because that seems more fitting today. And then before we bring the chef on, you'll hear that'll conclude, and then we'll play Taps with a 21-gun salute. Again, well done, Marine. And this seems to be a more appropriate version of the Marines' hymn, given the speech you just heard. This as we salute the life of a Marine, a Marine officer, Jim Lehrer from Texas. So there you have it, our little salute to Jim Lehrer. I want to thank the official historian of All Marine Radio, Ohio Man, for sending me. And again, for those of us who walk in the same footsteps, you know, all of our chests swell to know that he was one of us. The few, the proud, the Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans...